Time for Sports Lit 101 here. Bruce with us in studio, and we're continuing to look back at some pairings.
Yeah, we're going to look closely at pairings, which we didn't do last week because we had the chance to talk to Sherrod Baltimore. But what these pairings are we're going to talk about just football today. And are for the person, someone says to me, oh, my husband, my girlfriend, my wife, my son likes football. What books should I get them? So these, there are quite a few. These are from, we've talked about them over the last few years, but three that would go together very well are Collision of Wills, Johnny Unitas, Don Shula, and The Rise of the Modern NFL by Jack Gilton, The League, How Five Rivals Created the NFL and Launched a Sports Empire, and President at the Creation by friend of the show, Upton Bell, with Ron Borges, because the three of those will give anybody who was not around in the 1950s or was, even I'm as old as I am, I'm not old enough to remember a lot of the details of this, how we got to where we are with the National Football League, how it was so unpopular. It was considered a gambler's league. It trailed horse racing, boxing, golf, all kinds of other things in popularity, certainly baseball. Now, if there are three other books that have to do with the history of the NFL, which are more contemporarily focused, one, Redskins Insult and Brand by C. Richard King, which is a fabulous book, which ties back to the other books because it has a lot to do with George Preston Marshall, the avowed racist who took the Boston Braves and turned them into the Washington racial slurs. An interesting guy, George Preston Marshall, responsible for many of the best innovations in football, but an avowed racist who in his will created a foundation that could do anything as long as it did not promote integration. Dick Crapo, friend of the show and a great writer, NFL Football, A History of America's New National Pastime. This is a great overview for anybody who wants to understand how pro football came about. And it's with a very clear eye. There's no axe grinding on here. Dick is a professional historian. So his book is good. And I thought you would pair that with Roselle, another friend of the show, Jerry Eisenberg's biography, because it'll give you an idea of what happened when people like Burt Bell were no longer in charge of the league, and people like Pete Rozelle, and then eventually the guy who I don't even like to talk about, who is head of the league now. It's good to understand the way these things came about. Then I thought there was four more books that we could put together as a group, and one is Pigskin Nation, How the NFL Remade American Politics. We had Jesse Barrett on. That's a really underrated book. I've gone and looked at that a few more times. It's really, really good. Pigskin Nation. Then The Game Before Money, Voices of the Men Who Built the NFL. This was from more than 2 years ago. We had Jackson Michael on, who we learned his real name is Michael Jackson, but he had to change it to be a writer. Now, The Game Before the Money is great because it's all based on interviews with players who played before the, quote, golden age of the game. And then two books that we've had more recently, The Dancing Bear, My 18 Years in the Trenches of the AFL and NFL with Rod McDowell, by Rod McDowell, the longtime pro lineman, which is a really good look at how the AFL and NFL came into being and how it didn't work out as well for the players as people thought, except for, the Joe Namath of the world. And then a book, you should read. It's a tough read because it pops a lot of tough questions, and that's Against Football, One Man's Reluctant Manifesto by Steve Allman. Steve Allman, who's been on the show twice and is a brilliant writer and a very good thinker. If you pair that with those, it'll really give you an idea that you can love the rough and tumble days of the game, but then we need to look at the cost that those players paid. So those are my pro football pairings. And I got just a few college football. Oh, no, there's one more I want to put in. This should go with any. If your guest recipient likes fiction, I would argue that it's the best football fiction of all time. A book I know you and I both love, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
God, it was so good.
By Ben Fountain, which is it's an imprint of HarperCollins, Echo Books. Especially read this if you're not a fan of Jerry Jones, who a thinly disguised bad guy in here. But Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk really takes a look at, in through fiction, what so many of these other people have talked, the way that the NFL has militarized its language, tried to hitch its wagon to our servicemen and women in a what I think is a most inappropriate and derogatory way, though they would say it's celebratory. And the way that we asked Jesse Barrett the question, we asked Steve Allman the question, what's had a greater effect, the NFL on American politics or American politics on the NFL? And that's a really big question. And just to mention that book again, it won the National Book Critics Award for Fiction, the Los Angeles Times Award for Fiction, the Flattery Dunnan First Novel Prize, the Penn New England Cerulli Award for Excellence in Sports Fiction, which is a really big deal.
Now, did you ever see the movie version of this?
No, I haven't.
I didn't either.
I haven't. I keep thinking I should get it. The Texas Institute of Letters Jesse H. Jones Award for Fiction was a finalist for the National Book Award in both the United States and the United Kingdom. And a book about American football getting to the finals of the United Kingdom Book Award is really a big deal. And then just for those of you that are historians of college football and who are in any way upset about the way that some big-time FBS programs are run, we had a great book called Cheated, the UNC Scandal, and we had J.M. Smith, who wrote it with Mary Willingham, on. If you really want to be proud of the way it's done at Maine, as opposed to the way it's done in some of these other programs, read this book, Cheated, because literally hundreds of people cheated their way through large parts of the University of North Carolina with systemic help within the athletic department, and it's a shame. And then I would offer that the two books that we have on the Penn State scandal by a different by Ronald A. Smith, Wounded Lions, Joe Paterno, Jerry Sandusky, and the Crisis in Penn State Athletics, which is from Nebraska, and Nailed to the Crossbar from NCAA Penn State Consent Decree to the Joe Paterno Lawsuit by Mount Nittany Press, are both books not only that with great insight into that particular scandal and that particular problem, but into the insidious ways in which the National Collegiate Athletic Association, which is the kindest thing I call it, really looks out for its own financial interests and doesn't really give a damn about athletes or people or innocence or guilt. Just if they can spin it the right way to keep making money, they want to do it. And Mark Emmert wants to come in here and argue that with me any day. I'll be happy to do that. So those are pairings. We'll look at some others next time. I just want to quickly mention two books we're going to be looking at in the future. I just finished this novel last night, Searching for Terry Punchout, a novel by Tyler Hellard from Invisible Publishing in Canada, which is an imprint of a larger Canadian publisher. Great novel, a hockey novel. It goes into some often plowed ground, but it's a really different look at it. And it takes place mostly in Nova Scotia, and there is a sense that of sort of that Nova Scotia, Maine, Atlantic, the weather, the things. It's really good. And then a really great book called We Want Fish Sticks. Now, you have to be of a certain age to remember when people who were playing the New York Islanders would chant We Want Fish Sticks, because they went through a curious rebranding back when Mike Milbury was their coach and Don Maloney was their general manager, in the depths of despair long after their dynasty, where they rebranded and may have put on the stupidest looking logo of all time, where the guy looked exactly like the Gorton fisherman. And it's all about the times and the jerseys and the rebranding and how they were they went from four-time Stanley Cup winners to the stepchild of New York hockey, trailing the Rangers and the Devils. I haven't quite finished it, but it's really good too. So we talk about those next week, pairings for hockey, basketball, and then the week after, baseball and running.
Excellent. Sports Lit 101 every Wednesday. And by the way, I think we touched on this last week, but throughout the month of December on social media, on our Twitter feed, we are honoring some of our favorite books of the year. We're calling it the Downtown Book Awards, and it's a chance to revisit some of our favorite books and authors that we've had a chance to talk with today, and we're retweeting the interviews that accompanied our discussion of those books today. Great book on the journey of Apollo 8, the first manned mission to the moon, called Rocket Men by Robert Kurson. We talked with Bob Kurson back in April, and a fascinating interview, and I'm a big space buff, but what I didn't realize until reading the book is this is considered by all the NASA people to be the most dangerous mission NASA has ever had, even more so than the landing on the moon. Wow. Because this was all uncharted territory, and it came just over 2 years after the tragedy on the launch pad with Apollo 1 that killed three astronauts, a couple of unmanned missions that had ended in failure. And they essentially accelerated the program and said, we got to get this done because the deadline's coming. We're running out of decade. And so they hustled these guys together for Apollo 8. and sent them off to the moon. And there were a lot of people who worried they might not make it back. And what made it especially dramatic is that it was timed for them to get to the moon Christmas Eve.
Right.
And there were people who reached out to NASA and said, if this ends in disaster, you're going to kill Christmas, because people will always remember Christmas as the day we lost those astronauts.
I didn't know.
And instead, it was the crew of Apollo 8 on Christmas Eve reading from the book of Genesis in one of the most moving moments, I think, in modern history.
Yeah.
That's why I just wish we were back in space more. I love space.
Well, it's the first of our Downtown Book Award winners for the year. Check it out, Rocket Men by Robert Kurson. Another book that I'm sure we'll honor as we go along this month is another NFL book by Mark Leibovich, Big Game, which is just great. It's on the modern NFL, and Leibovich, who's mostly a political writer, embedded himself with the NFL owners. What an interesting group. And look, I suggest you read the book, but to get a taste of it, I don't know if you've seen this today, at thebaffler.com, our friend David Roth has written about the book Mark Leibovich wrote. And if there's any better in the business than David Roth, I don't know who it is. And I just want to read you some of this because it's so good. This is David Roth setting the scene for the Mark Leibovich book when Mark went to the owners' meeting to hang out with these NFL owners. It is cold in the room, that heavy gathering of wealthy older persons cold that's achieved only through a degree and intensity of air conditioning that approaches industrial refrigeration. It's too bright. Bright enough that the pink cheeks of the wealthy older people gathered there, drinking and talking in groups of four and six, seemed to blaze and leer. The men, as a rule, markedly older than the women. The music, if there's music at all, comes from featureless men in evening wear plunking through standards on a nearby stage. The conversations, which are loud and loose and relentlessly assured in that open bar way, are the thing. Limpid little pools of spilled gin are either shining under the too bright lights or vanishing into luxuriant carpet. The people passing hors d'oeuvres move expertly through it all, unthanked. Around the puddles and the wizened pawning hands, into and then out of the pods of increasingly drunk people eating various things and discarding skewers and the bones of meat lollipops onto tabletops and bar surfaces and discreetly into unlucky potted plants. This party is always the same, although it does not always have the same attendees. It is the very worst party in the world, and the most comfortable and most insecure people in American life are there.
Wow.
That's fabulous writing. That is terrific.
Check it out from our friend David Roth at thebaffler.com.